Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, November 8th, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by Ford, featuring voice-activated Sync App Link. Now you can control select smartphone apps with your voice so you keep your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road. Check it out at the 2012 Ford Fiesta and at Ford.com/technology. And by Slingbox, which just turned your iPad into a television. Slingbox introduces their new iPad apps, and now you can watch your home TV on your iPad anywhere you take it. Check it out at Best Buy or Slingbox.com/twit. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
I'm Jason Howell.
And joining us today, very happy to have Sarah Houghton from LibrarianInBlack.com on the show. You may remember her from our listener call-in show.
Yes, glad to be back.
Last December. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks.
Thank you for being in person. All these slackers on Skype took the trouble to come in.
It helps to be a half hour away. Yeah.
Well, okay. But still.
So everyone else should relocate.
That's right.
To follow your lead.
Exactly. There's lots of room.
Well, we book at least a couple of weeks out in advance, so they have plenty of time.
It's not like they don't have notice,
yeah,
right?
Totally.
Let's start off with the story we were actually talking about right after the end of the recording of Tech News Today yesterday. Reuters reporting that HP is considering selling WebOS to Amazon, Research in Motion, IBM, Oracle, or Intel. These are all possibilities. They have four sources, though, that say HP is considering selling WebOS. Now, The Verge today has a news story saying that an all-hands meeting will take place at HP at 4:30 p.m. Pacific today. So more HP news will break right as soon as we're done with the show, and we'll talk about it tomorrow. But Meg Whitman, that's a big thing, is it's not just an all-hands meeting. That wouldn't be news. But Meg Whitman is going to lead the meeting, and everyone's expecting that it might be some sort of talk about WebOS. Now, Eric Hesseldahl over at All Things D checked a couple of his sources, says IBM and Oracle have pretty much flatly denied to him that they are the people interested in this. He points out that Intel is teaming up with Samsung right now on an operating system called Tizen. Since they've sort of given up on Mego, since Nokia gave up on Mego. And Reuters reports that it's a price tag of hundreds of millions. So RIM can't afford it. You got IBM and Oracle theoretically out of it. That leaves what? Amazon and Amazon of this list from Reuters. So Amazon's going to buy them, huh?
Was Amazon, you threw out IBM on that because Eric said no on that one.
Yeah, Eric said no to IBM.
But then again,
and Oracle
still has Mark Hurd, right? Mark Hurd was all over Palm. He said we wanted to buy it. We didn't want to get in the smartphone business when he was at HP. They wanted to get all the IP there. I mean, Amazon seems like an interesting idea, but they've already put a lot of money into customizing their version of Android for the Kindle. I'm not sure why they would bother with WebOS other than, well, they would own it outright.
I think that would give them a big advantage if they owned it outright. I could see them saying, look, you know what, Android's free and that's nice, so we'll use it. But we don't really want to play in Google's camp. If we could own WebOS, then we would have it. We wouldn't have to pay for it because we'd own it. We'd have a few patents, and who doesn't like patents? They're the perfect gift this season. And then we can just, you know, hand it over and let our developers do whatever they want instead of having to work with Google's kernel and Google's system and modify it the way they did with the Fire.
What do you think the chances are that these guys actually will team up? I mean, and just have a consortium to buy this? I mean, this happened with Nortel. A bunch of companies went and said, hey, you know what? We want to make sure that we have access to this patent portfolio. We'll have a bunch of cross-licensing agreements. That way we can all do what we want with these things. I mean, for any one of these particular companies to do it, it seems a little silly. Amazon, I don't know why they would. RIM couldn't afford it. IBM.
I just told you why they would.
No, I still don't think it's a great idea. Okay, and Oracle?
Right, because it's much better to, like, Google run your operating system for you.
No, I'm just saying, if they all own it together, that way it seems not so much of an expense. Instead of spending out, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, as they're claiming.
I don't think an operating system is the kind of thing you want to own in a consortium, though. It works for patents.
Right, and that's what I'm talking about here.
But HP wants somebody to buy the operating system. They're not going to just sell the patents. So you think a consortium would buy it and then just stop developing WebOS? Or maybe
they could open source it.
Yeah. That would be interesting. Apparently, Josh Topolsky just put something up on Twitter, but I can't get it to load. Somebody in the chat room told me about it. So if anybody else can get it to load, we'll look at it. But
Oh. I can try right now.
Is it related to this, or is it just completely unrelated?
No, it's just that he's having a ham sandwich.
Oh, okay, that's good.
That's why I'm spending so much time trying to load it.
He says, hearing some wild stuff about what HP will say tonight.
That's all.
Wait,
that's
wild.
What we call
let's read into that. What could be wild? Amazon Jungle Disk. They had Jungle Disk. That's wild, right? So it could be Amazon. I had to go for something there.
These are the sort of tweets that bother me, but we're getting into something else entirely. That I've got something great to announce. Stay tuned.
But I can't tell you what it is.
Tweet it when you have something to announce.
Yeah. All right. Maybe he's going to... maybe he's going to post what that wild thing is on The Verge here shortly, and this is a way of drumming up interest.
One would think that that would be the place that they would post sensitive information that would drive page views.
No, the thing that Topolsky knows about the wild stuff. Maybe he's going to post that.
That's what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
On The Verge, right. You know, ad-supported.
Let's move on to Firefox 8, because it's giving me a heartache right now. I'm using it. And that's why I can't load all of these pages, apparently. But Firefox 8 is now officially available if you'd like to try it out for yourself. And what drew me into it was the fact that it's got better tab management, which is kind of the big thing with Chrome, is that I love the way I can just swap tabs back and forth. They've improved the animations. And I have to say, it is better. It still doesn't work as well for me as Chrome, because the tabs turn into little spikes when you move them around, and you have to look at the spike. You're not actually looking at the tab. The way Chrome, it actually keeps the tab up there. Here, you get this little spike thingy. You can't really tell where the tab is going very well.
You definitely get a little black
with Chrome,
marker, but yes,
you actually can just move the actual tab, and you see where it's going. I love that, but. It is not as slow. It's more doable than it used to be. They also improved add-ons quite a bit. So if third parties want to put an add-on into Firefox without your knowledge, you will have to enable it before it starts. One of the biggest, baddest examples of this was Skype. There was a Skype add-on that would get added into Firefox that was causing Firefox to crash like crazy. And now Firefox has changed their policy to say, you know what, third parties can't add add-ons in. Even if you say yes in the installation, when you launch Firefox the next time, it's going to ask you, hey, this third-party add-on was put in. Do you want to enable it or not?
I'm trying out Firefox 8 right now. I'm trying to load two tabs, and it's giving me the beach ball already. That's pretty impressive. I mean, the thing that Firefox has been losing out to has been Chrome, right? The thing is, it's got to compete with that. The people who liked Firefox were people who wanted to run away from Internet Explorer and other like built-in things like Safari. But Chrome has captured a lot of that attention because it's got all these neat features. And as Chrome's gotten older and older, it's gotten a little bit, you know, more bloated, but it's still pretty serviceable. Do you think that this version of Firefox is going to gain back anybody? Because right now,
We're not done with all the features yet. Twitter.
Yeah, wait.
It's got Twitter search.
What about?
Oh, I'm sorry.
What about
I missed that.
Hip social networking
that worked
service,
really well.
Twitter?
Worked really well for Flock and what was the other one? Rock Melt.
Well, those were a little bit more socially branded browsers that bothered people because they almost didn't seem full enough featured in traditional browser ways. But I like the idea of being able to search for keywords or hashtags, popular stuff on Twitter, especially for up-to-the-minute information, up-to-the-second. I mean, that's cool. There's certainly nothing that I feel like I'm losing out on by having that functionality.
Isn't it pretty much the same search that you could do on Twitter? It's just in the...
Right.
Window?
But that's like saying, couldn't you just go to google.com rather than having a Google search bar
in
your browser?
Killer feature?
It's a helpful feature when you're doing a lot of things, you have a lot of tabs open, and you want to be a multitasker.
So you're going to switch from Chrome to this?
I'm not necessarily. I'm actually a Chrome fan as well. The tabs thing does bother me because I feel like with Firefox and Chrome, and I don't want to generalize, but I would think that there'd be more power users of both of those browsers who would tend to have a lot of tabs open, and I just need as little confusion as possible when I'm moving things around and I'm reordering. But yeah, I mean, I think Firefox is a fine browser. I've always liked it.
I think it's an interesting upgrade. I've been using it on Android for a little while here, and it's just as laggy. I'm not noticing any improvements at all, sadly.
It's supposed to be taking less memory up.
Okay.
No.
That's a good case study, though, because that's why a lot of people ended up fleeing Firefox for Chrome in the first place, is because it just was slow. So whether or not it's using less memory, if it's not any faster for you, there's no incentive to go back.
Right.
Updated Firefox for Android, Jason? Is that... Float your boat? Better password? They've got password manager in there now?
I mean, I'll check it out. I will always check out when there's a new Firefox in the hope that they improve what it's been in the past, which for me has just been kind of bloated and slow. Definitely not my favorite browser on Android, but I'm waiting for them to prove me wrong.
I am excited about support for cross-origin resource sharing, which allows developers to load WebGL textures more securely. So I'll give Firefox that one. Good job. I like a little WebGL.
And if you're disappointed in Firefox 8, Firefox 9 is already in beta, so you can go out.
Yeah, they were only supposed to do 5, 6, and 7 this year.
Well, they had that accelerated release schedule.
Yeah.
They want to make
the accelerated release schedule is only 5, 6, and 7.
So this is like turbo boosted.
They're like well ahead of schedule. They're,
Nitro.
Yeah, exactly. There is an iPhone security bug getting a lot of attention today. Charlie Miller, he's a research consultant with Accuvant and a former NSA guy, revealed a security hole in iOS that was introduced with iOS 4.3, allows the running of an unsigned code. So he demonstrates it with an app he created, got into the App Store called InstaStock. It contains no malicious code itself, but it can be used as a vector to load a payload of malicious code. So in his video, he shows how once he's got InstaStock installed, it checks, can load the payload, and then he can start taking control of your phone remotely, downloading your address book, taking a look through all your file structure, all this kind of stuff. What it does is it takes advantage of JavaScript code for the web browser, which runs on a much deeper level starting in iOS 4.3 to improve browser performance. Apple created an exception for the browser to run unapproved code in a region of the device's memory, which up until then had been impossible. However, they used other security restrictions to prevent untrusted websites from using that exception to take control of the phone. Miller found a little corner away from that exception that he could access from his app. So he has exploited that code. He has told Apple about it. He's a responsible disclosure. He's keeping the details under wraps until the SciScan conference in Taiwan, November 17th. So he's given them time to issue a patch. Apple has responded by removing his app from the store, which makes sense because
but also kicking him out of the dev team.
Yeah, that right. Doesn't make so much sense.
Well, I mean, wouldn't you want this guy on your side, so to speak, so that if he says, "Listen, there's an issue. I've told Apple about it. I'm not going to tell you the details because I want to be responsible with this." Apple would be miffed because it makes them seem like they're vulnerable. And Apple doesn't like to be a vulnerable company, especially when it comes to things like this. But I don't know. Keep the lines of communication open. Have Charlie on your team.
Well, he did put the app in the App Store. So they made it past them and made them look like fools. So they're probably quickly thinking, okay, let's boot him for now.
Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with the app.
That's right. The
app itself doesn't have any malicious code.
I would imagine he's going to be let back in pretty quickly. It might actually be folded into Apple because, I mean, they got rid of the security guy, the top security guy.
Well, I don't know if they can afford him. He's a former NSA guy working for Accuvant. He's not looking for a job.
One of the things that Apple keeps doing with iOS, they keep trying to say, you know, we're secure. It's not an open Wild West kind of thing like Android has out there. And if you know, people are going to find exploits for these kinds of things, I mean, don't forget, you can still jailbreak a phone. There are exploits in this phone. You can do things with the iOS that it wasn't designed to do. You know, it's to Apple's best interest to try to get, you know, in contact with this guy, to listen to him and figure out what to do to make sure this kind of stuff doesn't happen. Because otherwise, I mean, they have so many iOS devices out there. They keep talking about their sales. You have to be secure.
Sarah Houghton, does this bother you at all? Does it make you worry about iOS?
I'm not big on iOS in
general. Yeah, I can tell.
Yeah. But
what are you using there?
Android.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, which phone?
It's an HTC Thunderbolt.
Okay.
With bloatware.
Right.
But, you know, you deal. It's an open ecosystem, and you can jailbreak the heck out of it. So I think the thing that bothers me about this is just that he got booted from the developer roles, and I think it's just a knee-jerk defensive response, and it gains them what? Nothing.
Some bad press.
Yeah, bad press.
Which they don't really care about, frankly. They're Apple.
When does their App Store generate good press, really? It's like, oh, we just kicked these guys out. We're inconsistent with our policies. Oh, this duplicates functionality, and then, oh, we're going to change our minds on that. I mean, the App Store is
And yet they're
really
the second most valuable company in the world. So the bad press
doesn't seem to.
They don't seem to
no,
give.
No, they don't care.
Freaking crap. Yeah.
I don't know. They still need people like Charlie to help them create a better defensive app store. Though, I mean, if they're going to be so closed down, I don't want to hear stuff about how an iOS app on my iPhone or my iPad is going to end up giving someone else access to my private photo collection. You know, I mean, it's like, if you're going to say this is why we're so draconian about everything is because it's for your own good, Well, it better be for my own good.
That'd be a great press release right there. We're so draconian because I don't think they've used that word.
Let's take a quick break. And
I think I got it from somebody in the shower.
And thank our sponsor, Ford, featuring voice-activated Sync App Link. It's not just the same old Sync that you're used to. You've heard us talk about Sync a million times. You talk to your Ford. You tell it what to do, and your car does stuff. It plays music. It sends text messages. And now it can do apps. OpenBeak is a Twitter app. And just by asking a simple voice command like read me my timeline or read replies, everything gets read to you. It would have saved Ayaz so much trouble on his drive up to the cottage.
Yeah, I drove.
Although it was a lot more fun to do it yourself. I know.
Drove up from L.A. to Petaluma, and I rigged it myself using a series of MiFi and Growl and system audio stuff. This would have been way easier.
Yeah, you wouldn't have to go to all that trouble because you got a rolling hotspot in your Ford. Now you got AppLink. You can use OpenBeak. You can also use Pandora and tell it to create a station on the fly. Just say, Pandora, you know, create a Nazareth station because I really want to hear Hair of the Dog and songs like it right now. And bam, it'll do it. And they're
can't
working.
Let you do that, Tom.
That you don't want to hear that band, Tom. See, that's the thing. Your Ford will never criticize your
right,
musical taste.
That's true.
AppLink is built on an API platform, allows Ford to continue to work with developers, so you should see all kinds of new apps coming down through this thing. Check it out on the 2012 Ford Fiesta and learn more about it at ford.com/technology. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. On to the Apple Store 2.0 app, allowing you to do in-store pickup. So they've caught up with Best Buy circa 2002, as far as that goes. But they also have self-checkout, not just for grocery stores anymore. You go in with your iPhone for select accessories. It's not everything in the store. You can scan it with your camera, use the app to pay with the Visa or MasterCard or whatever credit card you're using on your iTunes account, and then walk out the store.
Well, it's worth noting that these are only the cameras on the iPhone 4 and the 4S. The iPad 2, camera not good enough to do something like
kind of
this.
Bulky, anyway.
Even if you can run the Apple Store app on your iPad, it's limited to the two iPhones with the best cameras, and it's only for select accessories. Because you can imagine, it's like right now if you
iPod
go into
socks.
Like or earbuds or, you know, a smart cover type of a thing. I mean, it's the stuff that's usually on the second floor where you can, you know, buy a couple and then go up to the front desk and check out. Because right now, if you go in and you want a MacBook Air, it's not like they've got a stack of them on the shelf where you can go, I'm just going to go ahead and
the honor system
walk on out here. So it's limited, but I like the way that they're thinking.
Yeah, I just wonder, how do you police this? How do you, you know, I mean, do you just stop people and make them show you their app receipts? Because there'll be a receipt in there you can show them. But that seems to kind of get rid of the advantage.
It's counterintuitive when you think that it should be the seamless thing where maybe you wouldn't have to talk to a retail expert at all.
I don't want to talk to people.
Well, it works with supermarkets, right? I mean, you can bag your own stuff and you can. Is someone standing there watching you do this? It's kind of strange. I don't know if they're going to have somebody standing there by the earbuds like, okay. He took one. Okay, we're done. And I mean, I have no idea how that's going to work. I mean, I'd love to see the Apple security guards if they have them. Just like a different T-shirt, you know, staff.
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure. I mean, this app was supposed to be out last week, so they're a few days late with this. I can't imagine that the next time we walk into an Apple store, the whole thing's going to be rearranged just so that people can do a seamless self-checkout with a few accessories. Not even all of the accessories that they have. Not even all their software programs.
So you'll have two accessory categories. You know, this wall, self-checkout. This wall, not.
And there's a barbed wire fence around it and a big security guard.
It's
watching.
Like at the grocery store. Exactly.
Yeah.
Where they have all the registers with the actual people attending them, and then you do the work.
They'll probably will.
Maybe
probably
the app makes a really loud noise if you're trying to buy something very expensive.
Right.
They also, before the app was released, it was the big, some of the big buzz was you can go ahead and reserve a Mac or an iPad or an iPhone, and then you can go to a store within 12 minutes and it'll be ready. That's now been expanded to an hour.
I thought, still work within 12 minutes.
It might.
Just, they're saying an hour.
But they don't want to hold themselves to that just in case.
But that's not bad.
No.
I mean, especially in places like the Bay Area and New York. Hold on, Eric Schmidt.
Hey,
we're not ready for you yet.
He just blows things out.
Pipe down, Chairman.
All right, fine. I was just going to say, sometimes it takes an hour to get to the Apple Store anyway. so go ahead, Eric Schmidt.
What do you have to say for yourself, Eric?
He says ding and boing to the people on the audio podcast. Steve Jobs accused Google of ripping off Android in the Walter Isaacson biography. And Eric Schmidt, while speaking to a news conference in South Korea, where he was visiting Samsung, he's like standing right next to Samsung. He just visited the president of South Korea. So he said, as a general comment, I think most people would agree that Google is a great innovator, and I would also point out that the Android effort started before the iPhone effort. We used to get it first. And he's partly right. Andy Rubin founded Android in 2003, and it was purchased by Google in 2005. Of course, the iPhone didn't come out till 2007. So Android was around before anyone knew about the iPhone.
Yeah, but I mean, that I think the CNET article actually points out, well, that may be true, but the Android didn't actually, it wasn't released until 2008, and old prototypes of it showed it kind of like a BlackBerry. It had a dock on the bottom that you would scroll a little wheel to, and it didn't look anywhere near as iPhone-ish or iOS-ish when it came out in when it was prototyped a long time ago. So whether Android has been around a long time, or whether they saw some interesting ideas and took it, let's also face the fact that iOS kind of looks like the old Palm OS, okay? It's really not that different. It just has little rectangles.
You're saying there's prior art?
I'm saying there's similar items. Mm-hmm. I didn't say prior art. Okay. I will not just say checking. That. You're not going to get me there.
And then regarding Motorola, Schmidt said, and this was the key question because he's in Samsung's home country, right? He says, in general, with all of our partners, we told them that the Motorola deal will close and we will run it sufficiently and independently that it will not violate the openness of Android. We're not going to change in any material way the way we operate. Sound familiar?
Well, Andy Rubin also said the same thing last month.
And all the boilerplate announcements.
What else would they say, though?
Also, yeah.
You know, I wouldn't expect anything different, if they were planning something.
If they were planning to fold Motorola into the company, they wouldn't be saying this. I mean, they're flat out saying, look, we're going to run Motorola independently. So don't worry about that. Now, whether there's still a conflict of interest, yeah. I mean, of course they're going to deny it.
It does sound like Google, though. I mean, that's how they run their departments. They're all pretty much independent of each other.
I mean, they had overlapping things like Google Video for a while and YouTube, and eventually killing Google Video. So, I mean, mm-hmm. whether in the long run they're going to, you know, use Motorola more as like some kind of consumer electronics arm, that I think is a long ways away, because they still want to make sure their partners are making these phones. They don't want Samsung to go, we're picking something else. And they don't want LG to do the same thing, HTC. They want Android to be there, because when Android's out there, they can serve up ads all they want. This is really what's important to Google. It doesn't matter that they have Motorola as well. They just wanted Motorola's patents, really.
And don't forget that Samsung had to do a cross-licensing agreement with Microsoft. And so my guess is what Google's going around and telling all these guys is, look, yeah, we're going to buy Motorola. Don't freak out. We're buying it for the patents so we can defend you against some of these licensing deals and save you some money. So just hang in there and support us in this, because they've all pretty much supported. Nobody's spoken out against Google. Do you think it's a good thing for Android?
That they have Motorola?
To have Motorola in-house?
Well, to have more patents to defend themselves, it is.
Sarah Houghton, you agree?
Yes. As you said, patents are the gift of the season, so snap up as many as you can now.
I have them on my Amazon wish list.
Oh, okay. I'll check that for you.
Give me some patents.
I just think, I mean, they're...
Hurry, because I'm about to sue.
Damn it. Christmas can't get here fast enough. Oh, God. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say Android's competitive advantage is that it is open. And so I think they just need to reinforce that to the partners and really give them a sense of confidence. And I think that's just how I read this.
Yeah. Yeah. And that because we own Motorola, we promise we won't be evil.
Yeah.
All right. Finally, the Communication Workers of America got in a spitting fight with Sprint Nextel today over the AT&T T-Mobile merger. CWA says that AT&T's T-Mobile merger will create an additional 96,000 jobs, along with the 5,000 outsourced jobs AT&T has pledged to bring back. Sprint Nextel had previously put out their own study done by David Newmark, a professor at the University of California, Irvine, saying that there would be thousands of job losses. CWA called that study sloppy research and said Sprint Nextel and others doing that kind of research show an inability to distinguish between the change in the number of wireline and wireless jobs, trying to say that, well, yeah, AT&T is going to lay off a bunch of wireline people. That has nothing to do with the T-Mobile merger. Sprint called the CWA statements a distraction from the main issue of higher prices, fewer choices, and lower quality products for mobile wireless services. And Free Press decided to get in on the act as well. See two people like slapping each other. Sometimes you want to join in. And S. Derek Turner said that the Communication Workers of America is simply trying to reheat stale leftovers, and claims that they're not accounting for the T-Mobile lost jobs that will happen when AT&T and T-Mobile merge. Other than this being a big stinking catfight, is there anything to pull out of this? Do anybody want to pick a side, say who they think is right here? I'll go first. I think there's going to be jobs lost. I don't care what anyone says. Yeah. When you merge companies, it doesn't make sense to add jobs. You're trying to save money. Jobs are going to be lost.
Now, that's crazy. Clearly, every single person on the union will have a backup person, and that's how they're going to create more jobs.
Are you saying a clone?
Not a clone. This is another person, because that's part of the job creation. Look, AT&T is going to say whatever it takes to try to get this thing done. That's as simple as it is. And if you're going to say there's going to be less competition, you have to say there's some kind of upside. There's more jobs. And that always sounds great. People are going to put that in the headlines.
Well, and it's just a semantics thing, too. It's like they can say, we're going to create 10,000 jobs. And then when you say, well, what about those 90,000 people that you're laying off? Well, those are now obsolete jobs.
Those are different. It would have happened anyway.
Yeah,
not
exactly.
A result of T-Mobile.
This is a technological advance type of a thing. So I never really pay any attention when companies say things like this because they're fudging numbers to make themselves look good. I mean, it's business.
By the way, the Justice Department Antitrust Division was speaking to the Senate today, and Attorney General Eric Holder said, yeah, we've got a team. We're taking this to court. This is not going to go away. If AT&T still wants to pursue this merger, we're going to end up in court. So I will sue you in federal court. Doesn't really apply because it's not a suit. Well, it is a suit, isn't it? But it's not the same kind of suit as the Winklevoss twins.
How about the news fuse?
Yeah. Yeah. Should we do the news views? I was just trying to give Jason time to find the federal court.
All right.
Oh,
I'm still a little rattled from Eric Schmidt bumping in on that.
Seeing Eric
turf.
Twice on a show.
Yeah. Frightening.
It can really get you where it hurts.
Developing reports that Nintendo aims to bring support for at least two touchscreen controllers to the Wii U are out there. When originally announced, Nintendo stated that the Wii U would support only one touchscreen controller. Develop, a blog, cites a trusted game development executive who says there are multi-controller indications in the Wii U code base. Source also said there is very little chance a Wii U could support four controllers.
Consumer Reports reviewed the iPhone 4S and now is recommending Apple's latest phone. The iPhone 4 didn't get recommended. You might remember that because the magazine said it had those antenna issues, antenna gate. But those antenna issues aren't a problem on the redesigned iPhone 4S, says Consumer Reports. Although I guess they got one of those models that doesn't have any battery problems because they don't seem to have a problem with that.
No, they dinged them for the battery, but they said they would go and evaluate that again later.
Yeah, well, it wasn't bad enough. Still recommending the phone.
We recommend it, bad battery.
Some people might disagree with Consumer Reports on that. It depends on what kind of vampire phone you have. Doesn't mean that the iPhone is perfect, though. They did rank Samsung's Galaxy S2 line of phones and Motorola's Droid Bionic phones higher than the iPhone 4S.
AT&T, the good guys that they are, introduced a new app called AT&T Call International that allows users to make low-cost calls overseas via VoIP. As an example, you'll be able to call the UK or China for 4 cents a minute. The app will work on the iPhone and some Android and BlackBerry devices. AT&T has full information, including a list of supported devices at callinternational.att&t.com.
Twitter web users may be seeing some changes on their front page because Twitter is rolling out the activity and username tabs that it announced back in August. The activity tab combines those together. It's kind of like your Facebook news feed where you will see what your friends are favoriting, who they're following. The username tab replaces the mentions and retweet tabs, and apparently Twitter's still tweaking the tabs as some users have seen them appear then disappear, but they will be rolling out soon, we think.
I still haven't seen one.
I haven't seen one either.
I haven't seen it either.
The Supreme Court of the United States started hearing arguments over the constitutionality of secretly placing GPS devices on vehicles without a warrant. While trying to determine whether the line is on the right to privacy, Chief Justice John Roberts asked Deputy Solicitor General Dreeben if the government could attach GPS tracking devices to the vehicles of the nine justices. Dreeben responded, well, yes.
We have.
Lower courts have made conflicting rulings on the legality of the matter, and the Supreme Court aims to clear it all up. That's what they do.
Five counties in Oregon will use iPads to register votes. The AP reports that Apple donated five iPads, and the state spent $75,000 on software that would allow people who could not make it to the polls to choose their candidate. Election workers would bring an iPad and a portable printer to places like nursing homes and community centers. The iPad allows for things like font sizes to be increased, or it could even speak the candidates' names to voters with poor vision. After the voter chooses, a ballot will be printed and stuffed into an envelope because Oregon allows for mail-in ballots for all residents.
Do you think they bought the $75,000 worth of software in the App Store?
30% to Apple there?
Yeah.
I doubt it. It's probably sideloaded.
Speaking to Bloomberg West, VP of Product at Google Plus, Bradley Horowitz said, "We are delighted to be underestimated," in response to Mark Zuckerberg calling Google Plus a little version of Facebook. Horowitz also discussed the potential for Hangouts, as it will allow brands to put a face to a company. Google posted some information important for brand pages. No contests, sweepstakes offers, coupons, or other such promotions are allowed on their Google Plus pages. Those are the business pages we talked about yesterday. But an outbound link is fine.
Can you do your Mark Zuckerberg voice again?
Oh, that was just my little version of Facebook.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know that Zuckerberg really talks like that. But when anybody says a little version of anything, they should say it that way.
They should.
Don't you think?
I think there are going to be a lot of contests and coupons and promotions that try to get past the Google Plus censors.
Oh, yeah.
That's a full-time job trying to clean all that stuff up. All right, on to Patent Wars. The Rapid Fire Edition. Microsoft is currently in talks with China's Huawei for royalties on its Android devices. Meanwhile, Bloomberg reports that Barnes & Noble has asked the Department of Justice to investigate Microsoft's patent licensing scheme, saying Microsoft is raising rivals' costs in order to drive out competition. Lastly, LG has signed a patent deal with Intellectual Ventures. If that name sounds familiar, Intellectual Ventures is currently suing Motorola, Dell, and others.
Probably you.
They
sue a lot of people. Let's go on to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
There was a lot of heartbreak about the randomizer today because we usually only pick one, but there's some rice that contains human blood.
Wow.
Rice can be made into human blood.
It was a close one. The rice can be made into human blood. You'll have to look that one up on your own, though, because we're talking about Honda Asimo slimming down, went on the Doucan diet. Got a little taller and can now do all kinds of things on its own that it couldn't do before. It really doesn't look that different to me. I don't mean to insult Asimo, but, you know.
I think if they had the old Asimo up, you'd see how much smaller this is. I mean, I've seen one a couple of years ago, and it was much larger than that.
Why are you giving robots body issues, Arias?
I'm not doing it. You're the one who doesn't understand the difference. All the weight he's lost?
I don't see fat.
You don't see fat on the robot.
I don't see weight differences in robots.
What's most important about this robot is that it can actually use its fingers to open things like bottles, and it can pour things. And of course, some of the headlines screamed, Asimo can now serve you beer, I guess as long as it has a twist off.
It should be able to do it. You can do it, yeah.
It should be able to do a pop top.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. What if you're really thirsty? This is torture.
Yeah, because we're watching it, and from the moment Aya started saying it can twist off, it has been slowly twisting off a thermos.
It's not crushing a paper cup, it looks like.
Yeah, it's going to take you a while. You shouldn't be in a hurry for your beer.
It pours a little
or
bit.
Or green tea or whatever
and then
it is.
It pours a little more.
They've got there.
Look at that staggered. That's some advanced robotics right there.
It really
that's
is. Actually, it's pretty impressive. Yeah.
That fine motor coordination could be very helpful to a lot of people that are disabled. And the other one of the things they actually showed the robot doing was pushing a cart, which could. It's a simple thing. If you want like a robot waiter, do that too.
Yeah.
And pour
robot. Robot waiters.
It's you remember that place soon. In New York that only have robot dealers? They have robot waiters. It'd be perfect.
Robot cocktail servers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with your robot dealers. I like it. This episode of Tech News Today is also brought to you by Slingbox. Just in time for the holidays, Slingbox introduces their new iPad app. You can watch your home TV on your iPad anywhere you take it. I've been using this a lot lately to watch things off my DVR while I'm in my office playing on my computer. It's like having another television in your house because anywhere you have an internet connection, you can see anything that is on your TV. Live TV stations, no blackouts, whatever you pay for, whatever you get over the air, whatever you have, you hook up your Slingbox to that, you hook up the Slingbox to the internet, and then anywhere in the world that you have an internet connection, you can watch your home TV. So check it out at slingbox.com. Slingbox and your home TV now appearing on iPads everywhere. And now appearing, Sarah Lane in Calendar.
Thank you, Tom. Verizon's double data plan for 4G phones launches today. However, there are some issues with it. It's only for existing customers who have upgraded their service or purchased a 4G smartphone within the last 14 days. Very likely that it does not apply to you.
They'll double your data, no one.
Yeah. I mean, they're looking for people who are just getting into, they got a Verizon phone, they want the double data plan.
So screw that, I'm going to Republic Wireless.
Exactly, Republic Wireless launched their $19 unlimited wireless plan. That's the one that makes use of wireless connections whenever possible to keep data loads lighter. However, also has some limitations.
What?
Yeah, so there's something called the fair use threshold that hovers around 550 minutes, 150 texts, and about 300 megabytes of data. And if you cross that too frequently, then you get booted from the whole plan.
Unlimited 300 megabytes.
Yeah. No one would use 300 megabytes.
Though. Who would possibly ever use 300 megabytes?
That's a huge deal. Yeah.
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 This is not fair use. Fair use has a posse. This is not that fair use.
Republic Wireless, I thought I knew you. EdTech New York Javits Center kicked off today. It runs through the 10th. The Samsung Galaxy Tab 7.0 Plus for T-Mobile is available on November 16th for $250 down payment. What does that mean? Okay, so you sign on to a two-year contract, and then you get a $50 mail-in rebate. So then you pay $250. Oh, except that then there's an extra clause of 20 interest-free monthly payments of $10 for a grand total of $450. So that's some fuzzy math.
It's like the calendar's got a big asterisk next to it.
It's 250, except it's 450.
Yeah. That's bearded math.
It's very strange. A reminder that the emergency alert system, this is the nationwide alert system, is going to be tested tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Wednesday in the United States.
Right.
Yes.
Nationwide.
Don't be alarmed.
2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You know, I was listening to the radio today, and I must have heard three reminders. We're going to be interrupting service on the station for 30 seconds.
Well, they're trying to make sure people don't freak out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've never had anything quite so nationwide before. And finally, the 25th anniversary Zelda edition of the Nintendo 3DS is coming to European retail stores on November 25th.
Ooh, it looks nice, too.
It does look nice.
Let's check what's incoming.
Incoming message.
This first incoming message is a voicemail from Matt. And he wants to talk about the Fire and the Nook, which is not a pub. He means the two e-readers.
TNT crew, Matt from Columbia, Maryland. I think Amazon made a mistake by not coming out with a color tablet earlier. You know, last year when my family was looking for e-readers, none of them were interested in an e-ink screen. All of them wanted a color tablet-like functionality. And I think a lot of people, mainly the non-technical users, were in that boat. And Barnes & Noble did a good thing by coming out with the Nook Color. I think they captured a chunk of that market, whatever size that may be. And I think there are a lot of people who are now locked in that ecosystem and are going to stay with Nook because they've already purchased books and media through them. So I wouldn't say that the Kindle Fire is necessarily going to kill. Of course, if you're a Geek user or you're a Prime member, you haven't purchased another ebook reader, you may be interested in that. But I do think Barnes & Noble has something there. Anyway, love the show.
Now, four of us that host the show every day are inside the Beltway. We have we're not in touch with normal people, with human beings who use technology in a normal way. But thank goodness Sarah Houghton's here today, because you see people who are exactly the people he's talking about. People are just like, I'm just interested in a reader. Is he right?
No, he's wrong.
Oh, why is he wrong?
Totally wrong.
totally wrong, Matt.
I wish that we actually had good market share numbers for the different e-readers, because we have nothing. But just based on anecdotal evidence of what librarians are seeing across the country of people coming in and using our materials, and just from what I'm seeing with friends and family, not a lot of people went to the Nook. I mean, it's something that we have recommended for a long time, because it did allow you to put other content on it, and you could use library books on the Nook, whereas for a long time you couldn't on the Kindle. Now you can.
So it was in your interest to get people to use
very much so, just because it was better for them and they could access our stuff for free, and free is always good. But I think people didn't turn away to get a color Nook. They turned away and bought an iPad. That's what happened.
Or they just didn't get anything.
Like me, they just chose not to buy into the.
Are you excited about the Fire?
I am guiltily excited about the Fire. Yes, I will try it and I will use it, but I will also hack it like I did my original Kindle.
So. Right. Well, so the Fire over the Nook tablet.
I would say yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
After seeing the videos.
We got some emails from several people. One of them wrote in and said, I think Tom is underestimating the value added for Nook buyers. My father bought a Nook. When you go to Barnes & Noble, they have a nice big Nook display at the front of the store. Usually they have someone that can answer questions there as well. And to the side is a lot of covers and such. Overall, it's almost Apple Store-like in experience. As silly as it seems to you and I, they also offer classes. All in all, it's very customer service-oriented. Yes, the Kindle is available at Target and I think Walmart, but it is usually behind glass. You can look at it, but there's nobody to ask questions and no classes offered. The Kindle Fire is for the Amazon user. It's not for people that are comfortable with the online world. The Nook is for people that want a lot of hand-holding and help. And this is what Ayaz was saying when we've been talking about the difference between these two. Sarah, what do you think of that? Do you think that makes a big difference?
No, I disagree on that too. I think that you get a lot of people using the Kindle and the Amazon ecosystem simply from name recognition and brand trust and the fact that it's so pervasive. And I just don't think the Nook has a big enough market share. And I think it's nice to have those little displays and the hand holding, but I don't think it's a deal breaker.
You don't think enough people take advantage of
it? I don't think that they do. And I don't think a lot of people go into Barnes and Noble stores anymore. So, that in and of itself.
Barnes & Noble has brand recognition. It's just.
But not necessarily for the Nook. If you ask people for a name of an e-reader, they're first going to say Kindle. Maybe they'll know the Nook, but most people don't.
Most people say Kobo. No.
Do they?
Most people say Rocketbook.
I'm sure somebody does.
Yes. Oh, Rocketbook. I had one of those. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Last email.
All right, Malforian writes, just a quick word about the Sony limiting downloads to two machines. I work for a video games retailer in the UK, and I think I know the reason. It's map packs, not games, but map packs. On the 360 console, Call of Duty, for example, map packs are locked to the account by buying the maps. On the PS3, they're not. So say 20 friends play Call of Duty on the PS3, only one of them buys the map pack and then goes around to all his friends and downloads them to their machines for free. I know this happens because we have customers that come in gloating about how they've done just this. This means that Sony and, say, Activision has lost out on, 19 sales of map packs at 11 British pounds a time. That's going to add up, and I'm sure Activision has been pressing for this change for years.
You know, that's interesting. That's an interesting thought that map packs would be another thing. Don't make the same mistake that everybody makes in saying that they would have sold 19 sales of map packs because 20 people went and shared it, because not every one of those people would have bought the map pack
right.
if they hadn't got it for free. That's a fallacy. But I think they could have solved this problem with map packs by just restricting map packs to the account. Like Microsoft does. They wouldn't have had to restrict the whole device. That just doesn't make any sense. And frankly, I really don't think they're losing that much money. I mean, a lot of people do this kind of thing, but I want to see some numbers on and some studies done on how much they actually lose. And are there other opportunities they could take to sell more things by taking advantage of having unrestricted access? That's it for this edition of Tech News Today. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. Everybody on our Reddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, who helps submit stories. Everybody who's submitting their favorite moments of the year, you can do that at twit.tv/bestof, BESTOF. Let us know what your favorite moments of 2011 on Tech News Today are. And, in fact, all the Twit shows, you can do that there. And thank you, Sarah Houghton, for driving up the 101 and joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Let folks know where they can find your work online.
Librarianinblack.net.
What are they going to find there?
Rants and, I don't know, ethically driven librarian freedom of information, open access, loveliness.
That's the stuff there.
That's the stuff.
All right, check it out. And thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us at TNT@twit.tv and give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll see you tomorrow.
Fortunately, you're not in the shot.